So next is something I call the preliminary look. I think you've been through 12 million versions of this, or your listeners have. But once you're not doing things wrong, you tell the hygienist or assistant with every patient, somewhere early in the appointment, you use a phrase such as, Mr. Smith, Dr. Jones has asked me to take a preliminary look in your mouth and show you what's going on, so you can be involved in decisions about your own health. So we're going to take a look at the teeth themselves first, then the gums. Now, then you just have the hygienist using the intraoral camera or just a mirror or just talking to you, just take a quick survey of the mouth and say out loud what she's seen, and assuming she's confident, she can't diagnose, but she can advise. She can help the patient understand things. So she can say, I see here this is a tooth. I see where the filling is getting large. In situations like this, Dr. Maddow may recommend that we do this. We'll have to see what he says. And here's another place where I noted that the doctor had a concern, and we'll take a look there. And then so they just basically say things, but you don't try to get too detailed. You just tell the patient, just like if they were a relative, oh, here's some things I've seen. Nothing too heavy, nothing too detailed. You're just kind of letting them know. That's a preliminary look. But if a hygienist or assistant just says open up, and either the hygienist just dives to the gum line, or ask, do you have any problems, and goes to the gum line, you miss a big opportunity. Or if they don't say anything, they just kind of look at stuff and go, well, that's the doctor's province. So you have this sort of parallel universe in most dental offices where the hygienists are imperial land and the doctors are in teeth land, and they don't like support each other because the doctor should be reinforcing the perio treatment and the hygienist should be setting up the other stuff. Sort of a unibody protocol, but they don't do it because they short-circuit each other all over the place. So the preliminary look is what I call how the hygienist sets up taking sort of a survey of the mouth before going on with her appointment.
Okay, sounds good so far.
All right, next step, the doctor enters the room and he greets the patient. How are you doing? Good to see you. All the stuff you need to do to be a human being with your patients. And then you turn to the hygienist and say, what are your findings or what have you discussed so far? And the hygienist briefs the doctor on three main areas. One, medical history / patient concerns. So I've checked with Bill. There's no changes that he relayed to me in his medical history. As far as concerns at this time, he had a little sensitivity in the upper right. Two, perio / recall. There was no pockets over three. The tissue looked good. There was no bleeding. Everything looked great there. But he does have some bridge work and gets a calculus buildup, so I've recommended to Bill that we see him again in next April for his checkup visit. So that's perio / recall, point number two. And point number three, and then in my general survey of the mouth doctor, I found that tooth number three had a large filling that was breaking down. I note that you had a concern about that in the chart. Note I didn't say watch. Had a concern about that in the chart. And I told him that you may recommend a crown on this, and he was wondering what kind of crown. Okay, so what happens here is the hygienist has teed up the ball and handed the doctor the club. Most times the doctor comes in the room, they have to find the tee, the club, the ball. This way it's just bam, it's all ready to go. But it isn't jamming the patient either. And this is what it's hard to explain because I want to be able to sleep at night too. If you just give patients good advice clearly and simply, I like the way Greg Stanley says it. I think he says it so concisely. Tell patients what you feel is best for them and then cheerfully give them what they want. And most practices don't tell them what's best for them because they've never decided what's best in their own heads. So we come full circle.
That sounds great. Okay, so now we're in the room and all that stuff has happened and the ball is teed up for the doctor.
Yeah.
Okay, then what's next? Anything else?
Well, the doctor goes ahead with his diagnosis and tells him what he sees, and that gets into a whole bunch of stuff. But if your listeners just do what we talked about so far in these very simple kitchen-tested techniques, they'll do great. Now, here's one of the things. Do you ever remember, you might be a little bit young to remember this, but to remember the old Ed Sullivan show where they had those guys that were spinning plates all the time?
Sure, I remember that. I'm in my mid-40s now, so I remember that. I remember Topo Gigio, the little mouse.
Oh, okay. I still get the flu every time I think of that Topo. It's kind of a nightmarish little puppet. Anyway, but you know, if you ever think TV is kind of empty, vacuous stuff now, think about that later. We're actually watching on a screen some guy, you know, spinning 20 plates. I mean, Jeez.
Yeah, you can see that now if you go on a cruise and you go to the evening's entertainment. It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I get it. Okay.
Well, why does somebody like grow up wanting to be a plate spinner?
I don't know. It's just the strangest thing. Anyway, but sometimes I see my job as doing that as I kind of go through my circuit of the 200 clients or so, and I see most of them about four times a year or between myself and my associates. That's our general plan, and we'll come by and we have to spin this plate all the time. And again, just yesterday, as in a practice, they said, last time you were here, we were all fired up, we were doing the briefings, we were using the intro camera, all this stuff you hear a million times, and then we just fade on things. So they said, doctor, you're going to get just as good a briefing as you deserve. Here's how you do it. It's real simple. When you get a good briefing, you say to the hygienist, thank you, good eye, geez, that really helped, you're right on. Okay? And if you don't get a briefing, like you say to the hygienist, what are your finds? She goes, I don't know, sunny outside or something really lame. You pull her aside as soon as you can and say, man, that was a lame briefing. I went in the mouth and I had to take him from 0 to 2 crowns in 5 minutes. You haven't warned him at all. It's inhumane for you to wheel into the patient's, you know, wheel into the operatory, look at the patient's mouth, and in 5 minutes tell them they have $1,000 worth of work to do. What if you went home tonight, Rich, and there's a repair guy walking around, and he says, well, your refrigerator's broken, so is your garbage disposal. What do you want to do? You go, I want to see if there's a beer in the fridge. I mean, give me a minute. You know, you're probably going to replace your refrigerator, especially if you trust the repair guy. But, I mean, someone giving you 5 minutes to make a decision on it when you're just getting used to the bad news is too much.
And right, now, I think it's essential that a hygienist, and you were using this very similar phrase before, say something along the lines of, you know, you've got an upper right molar with an old filling and it looks like there's some decay around it. I have a feeling that Dr. Maddow is going to recommend a crown there.
Yes. And then she can feel the emotional thing and all that stuff. But the patient has time to just mentally adjust. So when the doctor comes in, it's not like, bam. And most doctors are compassionate people. And they know if they say there's 3 crowns or 2 crowns and they're kind of a brush busy day, they know they're going to shock and put dismay in their patient. And so they don't do it. They use phrases like, well, someday we might future crowns, watch, geez, when that breaks, then we'll do it. I got to run. And you miss a huge opportunity. And so it's humane, it's better, and so on. So the feedback is a really important process. It can be a simple way. Let's use that day sheet again. At the end of each appointment, the doctor walks out and gives the hygienist a rating, 1 through 10, on how well the briefing was. The patients won't know what's up, but the hygienist gives feedback. Or at the end of each day, the doctor tells the hygienist how good the feedback was, and the hygienist grades the doctor on how well he kind of helped reinforce her stuff. And so you don't do it to pick at each other, but if you don't recognize new behavior and constantly reinforce it, it doesn't become behavior. It goes back to old behavior. And it's so simple. All you have to do is thank your hygienist when they do it, and when they don't, remind them, hey, I really want this done. And you do it every day until you don't need to do it anymore. It doesn't cost anything.
No, and it's very helpful. And I love the briefing thing, and I think that doing the clinical calibration first will maybe give everybody more confidence in how to do the briefing and that they're doing it correctly. So great, great strategies that work together very well. Now, if somebody does all this stuff, I know you've done this in many practices. What kind of results do they get, or what happens in the practices that take the time to do these exercises?
Well, if they really do them, lots of good things happen. Like I mentioned in the first part of the tape, if you want to advance your practice, you got to deliver more care. And you can do that by doing more for the people you see or seeing more people. Of course, we work both sides of that, but we're focusing on doing more for the people you see. Now, in my practice, what we do is we not only measure production and collections and production per hour and all this other stuff, we track two very key statistics in a practice. One is the number of exams that are done per month, because all work practically drives from exams. That's recall, emergency, new patient exam. So we track the number of exams a practice has, because that represents patient flow in its most pure form. And I think other consultants are getting it now. I've been doing this for 25 years. It's just really a key number. If you're in the retail business, you'd be talking about how many people travel through your stores. We have the Mall of America. It's about 10 minutes from my office up here. And they get about 10,000 visitors a day. And they know that for every visitor, they spend about $230.
Okay? Wow, what a mall.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place in the winter, because it's the only place in Minnesota you can walk around in the winter. Otherwise, Well, we invite you to come up and see it for yourself.
Okay, but, I'll be there in February.
Okay, so you watch, if you're in retail, you watch the number of people that come in your store and how much by having displays and good service and good products, how much they buy per person. In dentistry, we look at the number of exams and the production per exam. So the typical dental office has, for the a typical general practitioner, 130 to 150 exams per month. So let's say it's 140 exams per month. And the typical practice, again, these are just down-the-middle kind of statistics. We're about $820 for a crown up this way. The typical practice does about $400 per exam. So if you got 140 exams, you're doing $400. That's $56,000 a month, right? Something like that. So that's kind of your doctor average. Now, you say, well, what kind of outcomes do you get? If you do this stuff, it's very, very reasonable to expect you increase your production per exam by $50 or $100. I don't talk about percentage of crown and bridge because a percentage versus gross practice production has too many other variables because maybe the doctor is doing ortho or not doing ortho and other things. So I look at the production per exam overall and the crown and bridge per exam. Anyway, so if a practice is averaging $400 per exam, obviously if they increase the production per exam by $50, that's about 12% growth or $100. That's the kind of action they should get. So one of the things I suggest your listeners do is everyone has this type of report, whether you're Softdent, Dentrix, EagleSoft, where you look at the production by ADA code and see how many exams you do and divide it into your gross production and see your production per exam. And I work with doctors all across the board. And the irony is when I go to a doctor that has a high production per exam, let's say he's doing $700 or $600 or she is doing $700 or $600 per exam. So for every 10 recall patients that come in or 10 patients in general, the general mix, they're going to do $6,000 worth of work. When I go to them, they're saying, I say, what do you want to work on? Oh, gosh, I wish my patients follow through better. I need better case acceptance. And I'll go to someone that the production per exam is, you know, $250, and they go, how's it going? I go, well, my patients accept everything I recommend. That's not the problem.
Ah.
It's the weirdest deal. But generally speaking, I find the ones that are already tilted towards thinking in terms of optimal, I'm not talking about pressuring or overselling or anything like that, they tend to see more of a challenge than the ones that are just in such a deep episodic maintenance mindset that their expectations are so low that it's easy even for patients to meet those expectations.